Accession number 14977, Ernest Harvey, Reel 7.
Mr. E. Harvey, Reel 7. This action across the cornfield, Mr. Harvey, was your first real unpleasant action against the enemy. What were your own feelings and memories of that time?
Well, really, the memories was really terrible. I mean, actually, we weren't in action. We weren't. I mean, it was just the Germans. I mean, we were just being slaughtered, and there was nothing we could do about it. I mean, you can just imagine being in a cornfield about 20 yards away, and just like a reaper, and everybody was just being mown down. Unfortunately, myself and this other chap, we were in the right spot at the right time, otherwise we would have been among them. We were in like where there was a mound, and we were behind this mound, and all we could see was the troops were just coming forward, and as they were coming forward, they were all just getting mown down. I mean, we had no artillery support. It was pitiful. And as I've said before, well, I couldn't believe it.
Did you see some of those that you knew or were
close
to you?
Yes, I saw my old platoon sergeant. He was killed. I saw him come up. Well, he had no chance. He was just mown down. He was my platoon sergeant at Vanspeth. And, the majority of them were strangers, but, I mean, there was reinforcements coming up, but as fast as they were coming up, they were just getting knocked out. So, eventually, the position, well, it was taken, but we were simply shattered. I mean, words couldn't describe, really, how we felt at the time. And when I got to this hedge, there was this artillery. He was with the artillery, he must have been an observation officer, but unfortunately, the chap who was with him, how he was going to get any message back, I think he must have been killed. And more or less, he was dumbstruck as well. There was nothing he could do, and I think he was really, well, what can I say, he was absolutely shattered as well. He was really annoyed to think he couldn't get no help, and it was just all around him. You can imagine when there wasn't just 10 or 20 soldiers killed. For me, there was hundreds. It was pitiful.
Had the Germans gone when you got into their positions?
When we got into the... When eventually these tanks came up behind us, and we eventually took the positions, and when we got there, the Jerrys had gone. Well, for me, there must have only been half a dozen of them, but they had, as I said before, there was three... To my knowledge now, there was three Spandaus, and they had the telescopic sights on, and they were down underneath in the dugouts, and all they were doing was just pulling the triggers. And they had another Spandau up a tree, and it was worked exactly the same way. And the only German I saw was this one running away. As I said before, I started firing at them, and the padre came and stopped me, and the tears were streaming down his eyes, more or less... As I said before, like he said, there'd been enough killing for one day, and of course I said, well, I couldn't repeat what I said to him, like, and then the sergeant had words with him, but there wasn't very many of us left to take the position at the time. And then
after the action, again. What was the morale of the unit like after having such heavy losses?
Well, the morale really among the men, I would think, was lower. I mean, really, they got the impression, like, if this was the case, like, well, we were just pawns. It was just a matter of, like, who was next and when we, you know. Of course, as time went by, we'd start to get artillery support.
Did you feel that way?
Well... At the time, I felt, well, really awful about it. You know, after seeing so many killed, I thought, well, I was dumbstruck. I mean, on a night, I don't think you did sleep, because really you had to stay alive to keep alive, stay awake to keep alive.
Were you under any great stress or fatigue at the end of the action?
No, I don't think so. Of course, I think with being at that age, at 20 years of age, I don't think you took it in as much. You didn't realise, really, I think, as much about life then. You began to accept it.
You were saying that at the beginning of an action, you feel rather strange.
Oh, yes, well, I mean, after that, I mean, when we got word we were going into an attack, well, everybody just used to go quiet, and your heart starts beating, and you got that terrible feeling came over you, and then your thoughts came back of the cornfield, what had happened then, and what was going to happen in the next attack. It was really, it was simply awful to know you were going to go into the attack. And well, I think everybody more or less felt the same.
Did you ever see any men who deserted because they knew they were going into action, or refused to go into action?
Well, I didn't see of any, no, but I did hear that there was quite a lot who had deserted, and a certain party told me, like, he'd been back to the beaches for something, or then he told me that those who had deserted were on the beaches and were unloading the ammunition boats, and then they were kept under barbed wire.
After the action itself, did you see any men whose nerves had gone after coming through
this?
Oh,
yes, oh, yes. I mean, they were bomb happy. There was half of them bomb happy. And in fact, if a shell used to go off for anything, any noise, they used to just fling themselves to the ground. I mean, any noise, but they used to just send them. They kept them in action as long as they could, but when they got too bad, they used to gradually send them back. But there was really some terrible cases.
Did you find any strength from religion or prayer?
Well, I used to keep wondering, like, whether there was a God, all these things, but I think when you were at certain times, you did say your prayers, and nobody can tell me that they didn't. You did say your prayers, you know, and I did. Put it that way.
Did you feel that they helped you?
Well, I think they did. They did help you to a certain extent, because you got to such a pitch after you said your prayers. You knew you were going into action. You used to say, "Well, if this is it, that's the way it's got to be." And you got to such a pitch, you just accepted it. And I think the majority took that attitude eventually, because. Well, what could you do? I mean, if we went back, things weren't too good for you.
Did you see anyone who shot themselves, wounded themselves to get out of it?
I didn't actually see anyone, but I heard plenty who did, more or less shoot themselves in the feet and in the knees just to get out of it. They would do anything to get out. In fact, I think they took a brave man to do that, really. But at the same time, you can imagine when you got dug in at these different places like Tilly, and when you were dug in and you were getting mortared day in and day out, and the casualties was terrific round about you, you can imagine what it was like to get out of it all. So I could quite imagine somebody trying to shoot themselves that way.
What were your feelings about men? You've said that to a degree it was a kind of courage to shoot themselves and injure themselves in that way. What were your feeling towards men, though, who wouldn't go on?
Who did that? Well, really, I couldn't blame them if they did do that. I couldn't blame them. He was a brave man. He said, well, what could you do? I mean, I think really the infantrymen, we were just there to take the positions, but as regards firing the rifle, well, we didn't really fire rifles that much. Really, what you wanted was automatic weapons and plenty of firepower, but the rifle was, well, as far as I was concerned, it was obsolete. I mean, really all we were doing, we were taking a position, we were digging in, and digging in as much as we could, and being mortared, left, right and centre. And then when Jerry did attack us, I mean, our artillery observation officers, they used to get, pick them, and they used to pin them down with the artillery, and then the burn gunners, I mean, those were quite good. But the rifles, well, they weren't it.
You found them slow and cumbersome.
Well, slow and cumbersome, definitely.
What was it that kept you going throughout them? Was it discipline, regimental pride?
Well, I think it was discipline, and really, and to think that you were a DLI man and you come from the county of Durham. I think that's what it was, and I think that the training you'd had, and you'd realised then that the training you'd done in the past, now you were feeling the benefit of it, because you were really grafting. I mean, imagine sometimes you were perhaps putting as far as 3 attacks in a day, and after an attack you had to dig in, and then you would get Jerry would start and walk you, and then we would have to retreat and then dig in again, and then right, we'd move forward again and then dig in. It's times I've known as digging about 4 times a day. I mean, where we got the strength through, I don't know. Of course, man, we did have these glucose sweets, which were very good. I think those kept us going a lot. And then each night, we got the rum ration. They used to come round with a tablespoonful of rum. But eventually, we used to get half a pot. There was that many casualties, there was bags of rum floating about.
Was that looked forward to, that rum?
Oh, yes, it was. We used to look forward to that every night. More so on a night, you know. Because I think that it put some heat into the body on a night time, which was when you wanted it.
Was that the main effect of it, that it warmed you up?
Well, I think so. I mean, I don't think it'd give you any false spirit or anything like that.
How important was it not to show your fears to your comrades around you?
Well, I don't think anybody took that much notice, because they fully understood. You could understand anybody being, we were all afraid, which was natural. I mean, we used to be dug in maybe 2 or 3 yards away from each other, and took to a trench in a hedge. No, everybody was afraid. There's nobody can tell me he wasn't. It was just a question like of who was next.
You'd had very heavy losses and new drafts had come to you. Did you have a rest period immediately after this action?
Yes, it was, I think it was after, it must have been after Tilly. After Tilly, I got a few days spent at Bayer, and we had like billets, and we had a nice bed, and we had bread. I think that was the first time we'd had any bread. And I would advise anybody to try going without bread for about 5 weeks, and then have a slice of bread, and they'll find out what a luxury it is. We had, we were well fed there, and we had a nice bed, and we used to have I think it was a cinema, showing his slides, and we had a shower. We all had a bath and a change of clothing, and I think we were there about 4 days. And it was really marvellous to come away from the trenches like, and then, and when we had to go back, well, I think everybody was downhearted, you know.
Who ran the centre that you went back to?
Well, I don't know who it was, but they certainly made a good job of it. I don't know who it was. It was like a few days, we call it LOB, left out of battle. And I think it was at Bayer where it was. But there was 200 or 300 men there, and they used to get them every now and again. But I only once had the LOB.
You mentioned the luxury of bread. What were you eating?
It was hardtack, hard biscuits. It was always hard biscuits.
How did you manage them?
Well, you managed them all right. I mean, but really, I think everybody was off the food. you know, I mean, when you're getting shelled every day, you couldn't look at food there. I know I couldn't, like, I mean, sometimes on an evening, like, when you get your hot soup, that was all right. But, no, I don't think, I don't think the men was worried that much about meals, not when we were getting, of course, I mean, you were getting shelled day and night, it wasn't there, there was no let up.
What were the weapons, or which weapons of the Germans worried you the most?
Oh, the Spandaus and his mortars, he was spot on with his mortars, but I mean, you must remember, Jerry, all those hedges, the whole area, I mean, he had all the map references of those areas, and wherever we dug in, he must have he'd known where we were in the map references, so he was pinpointing them left, right and centre, and we were just getting slaughtered. And actually, we discovered, like, as time went by, he was using these airbursts, and they were bursting in the air and going straight down, and that's where we were getting so many casualties. But eventually we started going down and under, which we had to, and that, I think that saved quite a lot of lives. But his mortars was, oh, terrible.
Could you hear them coming?
Oh, yes, you could hear them from a distance, but when they started splattering among the trees, you knew they were there.
What was the way in which you could deal with them?
With the mortars, well, the only way you could deal with the mortars was get right down as far as you could and get under. And I always remember... one of our chaps, I heard this man, whether it was true or not, I quite believe it, with shrapnel, he'd had his windpipe slit with his shrapnel, and the stretcher bearer was on the spot, and I always wondered why they all carried lots of pens, and he had this fountain pen in his pocket, and he took this fountain pen out, and he took the tube out, and he cut it, and he shoved it in his windpipe, and he saved that man's life. And I heard he'd been highly recommended by the medical when he went back, you know, when the chap had gone into back to casualty, one of the first aid posts. He'd made such a good job of it. But, I mean, the stretcher bearers, well, they were tip-top when it was possible to save a man's life.
You saw them in action several times?
Oh, yes, quite a lot. Oh, yes, I mean, under fire... Of course, the Jerry still fired at them, regardless of the Red Cross on arms. They didn't take any notice of that. I wouldn't say all of the Jerry's did mine. I mean, sometimes you could see the Red Cross going out and he didn't bother them. But I think when you were sort of going into an attack, and then again it was understandable, I mean, Jerry was shooting at everything. Everything what moved.
After the attack across the cornfield, you moved towards Tilly. What are your memories of that area?
Well, Tilly, oh, it was deadly. I always remember we used to have these spotter planes, and they used to fly low, and they used to pick these artillery positions out, and I've seen three spotter planes go down, and as fast as one was going down, another one was going up and taking its place. And at the same time, I also remember the crossroads of Tilly. We used to call the Red Caps, that's the military police. And at these crossroads, these were directing the traffic. When I'm saying traffic, that was tanks and what have you going up. And Jerry had these crossroads pinpointed with his mortars, and he was blasting the centre. And I could picture these military police, must have been three or four of them, they went to the roadside, and as fast as one was getting knocked out, there was another one taking his place, directing the traffic. Afterwards, when I thought about it, I thought it was silly. But that was the military police. Brave men.
Did that alter your opinion of them after England?
That did, definitely. I used to think they were rotters, but...
What else at Tilly was going on?
Well, Tilly, I mean, it was terrible. I mean, we were dug in there, and I mean, we were getting mortared again, and spandaus. It was pitiful, I mean.
You wouldn't be able to move much during daylight?
Well, you could move, but it was backwards. You couldn't you couldn't go forward. I mean, you could move, but you had to be careful. And, I mean, if you moved, you would go backwards, because they used to have a latrine trench, maybe it's about a couple of hundred yards back at a hedgerow, and you used to go and use that. Or if not, where you used to just go with your trenching tool and just dig a hole and do your business. I often think what wonderful place there now Normandy is, when you look around and see all the lovely green fields and you think of all the excreta what's been buried there and stunned the agriculture, they look good.
Do you have other memories of Tilly? Did you get much support from tanks?
We did, but we didn't like the tanks to come up, because when the tanks come near us, we found out that that's when we used to get all the heavy stuff thrown at us. We used to like to try and get away from the tanks. In fact, we found out that we would prefer being right away at the front of the fighting than at the rear, because all the heavy stuff was coming behind you. Whereas when you're right next to Jerry, you're more or less just getting the small mortars and the spandos, which we could cope with. You know, we got accustomed to it. But when the tanks start moving forward behind us, then all Jerry's heavy stuff came over. And then you get more casualties. Because the dust used to come from the tanks, it used to give our positions away.
What happened next?
Well, I think it was after Tilly, when the heavy rains came, and I always remember we were at this farmhouse in an orchard, and we were dug in on this bank side, and in this farmhouse in the cellar, I mean, it was stored with apple cider, and it was buckling down, and apparently they had trouble at the Mulberry Harbour. They couldn't get the boats, couldn't get in, and we were stuck there. But I always remember we got about half a dozen crates of this cider, and we had them, me and Charlie, we had these crates of apple cider, and the next time we went back to the orchard, to the farmhouse, Battalion HQ had been there cleaning the lot out, so we were fortunate.
How did you keep dry?
Well, the only way we could keep, I mean, we'd never had our boots or anything off for 3 or 4 weeks, and to keep dry we had our gas capes, which we used, and we kept dry as best we could.
Was it particularly uncomfortable?
Well, you were very uncomfortable, but I mean, if we could, we could change our stocks if we got the opportunity, which very rare we did.
Was the quartermaster getting any hot food up to you?
We started to get hot food and bread then, but we had to go back for it. You know, the sergeant would send a couple of men back to get the crumb, which we used to carry back on like two long cylinders, one on each back, and it was like hot soup, and then we used to share it out among the men, and then we used to get there, we start to get the bread. We got one loaf of bread among seven men, and the sergeant used to cut it up to make sure that each man got his fair slice, because bread was a real luxury. I think this must have been about 5 weeks after D-Day. And we had plenty of cigarettes. I mean, cigarettes was no problem. We had the tins of cigarettes and glucose sweets. And then, as I said, well, the sergeant used to come round every night with a room ration. There was plenty of that, because there had been, the more casualties was the wars, the more room you got, which wasn't the way to look out like, but that's what was happening.
As you went on day by day and saw your people around you being killed or wounded or taken off, did that harden you towards this kind of thing?
Oh, you got hardened. Oh, yes, you got really hardened. You got that used with death, and the smell of death was really terrible. In fact, it kept in your nostrils for months and months afterwards, the smell of death.
What kind of a smell is it?
Oh, it's a terrible smell. I couldn't describe it, but it's really terrible. Oh no, I couldn't describe that.
Did you come across any civilians who were caught up in these actions?
No, so very few civilians. In fact, what they do, they were all shell-shocked, the few we did see. Of course, we were mainly out in the fields, you know, away from the towns. It was very rare we got near any civilians. If we did, we just went straight through.
What were the German methods of cover and camouflage?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. We were advancing this particular day, and I was sent out as a scout. And I must have been about 20 yards in front of the company, and the officer who sent me, I thought, my God, scout, we out in front of anybody in no man's land. I didn't know what to think. And went across this ward, it must have been, about 15 yards. So got through this ward, I got through to the other side, and I'd no sooner got through the other side when all hell broke loose behind me. Jerry was in the ward, what I'd just come through. But he must have been about 10 yards further to my left. And his camouflage, he was marvellous with camouflage. So I couldn't get back, and I had to go forward. And it was a field, and it was more or less on high ground. And I couldn't come back, I was just going forward on my own. I thought, my goodness. And he started firing shots at me, and with this being on high ground, my small pack was shown, and I said to myself, well, I've got to get rid of that, otherwise I will have had it, because he could see me when I was lying, the small pack was shown, and there was no cover. So somehow with that, I got it off. When your life's at stake, it's amazing what you can do. But I got my small pack off, and I said, that's had it. And that's had me, the money I'd worn on there, it was in my mortars, but I wasn't concerned about that. I was more concerned about my life at the time. So that went, and eventually I got so far, and I stayed there till night time. And I crawled back to this hedge where I knew old chaps were, and then I shouted, and I think we had a password, and it was either a tap or retreat, you know, and I shouted who it was, and he said, what's the password, and I think I said attack. Well, and then I got back into our line. But at the time I thought, my God, the officer sent me out as scout, you know, right out in front. But afterwards I started thinking, you know, he must have saved my life, because if I'd been back with the other bunch, you know, I mean, the others, not all of them, but there was a lot of casualties, and I would have probably been there, but I think the officer must have known what he did, you know. I've often puzzled about that, but saying that, after taking the position, the way Jerry's camouflage in his trenches was, well, they were fantastic, but, and you could smell, you could really smell the Germans had been there, whether it was the uniforms or whether they, I don't know, like the Italians with a perfume or whatever they used, we could smell the German positions. It was, you know, and that was what was happening.
They didn't say anything to you for missing them?
Oh, no, well, there's nothing I could do. You see, where I'd gone through, he wasn't. The spot I'd just gone straight through, I couldn't see. I'd never seen the Jews. I mean, he was further, about 10 yards further, but after I'd got through, he'd let me go. And then you'd open up on the main body. And I think the same applied to the other scout who was further up, you know, because it wasn't a large wood, just about 15 yards. But as I'm saying, that was, it gives you an idea what Jerry was like with his camouflage.
Were you getting an opinion of the German as a soldier by now?
Oh, the German, he was a good soldier. He was very good. Oh, no, he was one of the best. I think the only thing what beat him was is because we had too much artillery, too much air power. That's what beat Jerry. We had too much artillery, and the typhoons. Well, the typhoons were out of this world. I mean, if that typhoon spotted a tank, that tank had it. There was no doubt about that. I mean, I remember seeing two tanks down in a valley, and we were. This was just before Fally, and two Germans had come up with white flags on the tanks. Fancy standing on top of a tank, you know, waving the white flags, but the typhoons were seen, well, and see the Jerrys dashing to the heads, but they'd gone. Oh, no, the typhoons were fantastic.
And you got excellent support, obviously. If you got into a difficult situation, the Typhoons were brought in.
Oh yes. Eventually, the artillery and the Typhoons, they were just fantastic. There was no doubt about that. And seeing that, mind, the marquee, the bridges, they had every bridge they taken, you know. The marquee did exceptionally well.
This is the French.
The French
resistance.
Marquee resistance, yes. Every time we came to a bridge, the marquee had taken it, you know, which was very good.